Welcome to the program for Thursday, February 17th, 2011, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tell you later on in the program about hour number two of In-Depth today. We start, as we do every Thursday, with industry chatter, meeting a leader from a federal contractor and learning about the business and their experience in doing business with the federal government. Happy to welcome today Dmitry Kagansky. He's Chief Technical Officer for Federal with Quest Software. It's good to see you, Dmitry. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. Give me the thumbnail, the elevator speech, whatever, about what Quest does.
Right. So the short version is that we simplify IT management. What that really means is we provide solutions for providing cost reductions through automations and other mechanisms, essentially trying to get more out of less, which is obviously a big initiative over on the federal side of things.
Yeah, I was going to say that will make you very popular around these kinds of times in the federal government. As you look at what the different IT initiatives, and it seems like there have been about 10,000 of them over the last year or so, that are coming out of OMB and the agencies, what of all of those maybe makes the most impact on what your company does or has made the biggest impression on you personally, that kind of thing?
Okay. Well, there's actually two big initiatives that we have going on. We've got FICAM, which is Federal Identity Credentialing and Access Management.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's been going on for years, but it has really stepped up over the last year or so. We also have a consolidation effort. There's a Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative where there's a mandate to reduce the number of data centers that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And those sorts of things are then driving a lot of the other initiatives going on.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear terms like cybersecurity. That's obviously around the identity management space. You'll
mm-hmm.
hear things like cloud first and other automation and modernization efforts. That really revolves around the consolidation effort. And that's an area that we play heavily in, and we expect to see a lot more activity in this year and the coming years as well.
Mm-hmm. When agencies come to you and ask you about data center consolidation, what's usually the number one question? I mean, I think we're beyond the point where people say, how do you do it? I think that the understanding level seems to be a lot higher than it was maybe just a year or 2 years ago. What is the number? Where do those conversations start?
Well, how do you do it still actually comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I know recently there's some study put out that said that 50% of the agencies out there still are looking for more guidance,
mm-hmm.
that OMB hasn't given enough out there. But the ones that do have a plan are still looking at how to execute it, because there's two ways to really do it. You could just take all of your existing boxes, put them into a new server room and be done with it. But that's not going to get you any more efficiency. It's not going to make you from a more green environment, that sort of thing. So they're really looking at more of a consolidation and migration.
Mm-hmm.
Get off of legacy systems, get onto modern platforms. And now that's where the mechanics of how you do it becomes a lot more important. And that's
mm-hmm.
where a lot of our solutions play, is actually moving data, migrating users, computers, databases, all sorts of IT systems and platforms to something more current.
Do you think the agencies overall are doing a little bit better at being, I don't know if sensitive is the right word, but aware of what the end user is going to see when he or she fires up their whatever they're using, whether it's a thin client or a full-size box or even a mobile device or whatever. Once they go through these processes, there were a lot of folks that were saying, my agency did this, I'm not an IT person, and when I turned everything on, I either couldn't get to everything I needed to get to, it didn't look the same, and I didn't understand how it worked, all those kinds of things. Are agencies getting better at the end user part of this?
Well, we're trying to get them there. We obviously have solutions that help with that, but we do see a bigger need for things like baselining and being able to set metrics before you make the move, so you know exactly what you're moving from. So when someone does call up with a complaint and say something like things are slow, you actually have numbers behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a lot of activity around that going on now, but it has been because of the end user push. And I think some of that is also because the end users have gotten more computer savvy.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting iPads, iPhones, more sophisticated equipment at home, and they're actually expecting the same sorts of things from their IT departments.
What kind of difference has that made in the way that you interact with the agencies when you have people coming to you saying, or coming to them, and then they're coming to you and saying, I've got this iPhone that I've used at home or an iPad, as you've mentioned, and I want to be able to get it on the network?
Yeah, and that's actually a big, big challenge for the agencies, because with a lot of the technologies that are out there on the consumer and retail side, There's no way to actually lock them down. You take the iPad, which even I use, and I love my iPad, but at the same time, I can't put it on my corporate network. I can't store sensitive data on it, and our IT admins don't have any control over it. So that's one of the sensitivities that the federal space has of bringing those devices in. And that's where we're seeing, I don't want to say friction, but there's definitely a big gap between what IT is today providing versus what consumers and end users are actually demanding. And we're trying to help with that. We do have all sorts of solutions to help lock things down, to do more auditing and logging and monitoring. But ultimately, the agencies have to balance keeping up with the new technology, but still maintaining the services they have. You've got agencies that are, you know, 20, 30 years old. Some of those systems are that old. They still need to continue to provide those services.
My colleague Chris Dorabek calls me a half techno because I really love mobile computing. I got an Android phone not too long ago, and I'm a geek about that. And a pad won't be far behind. I'm not so into social media, and that's where the half techno comes from. This is not going away anytime soon. Every CIO that I talk to says the avalanche of mobile devices is only going to get bigger. What do you think CIOs maybe should be thinking about when it comes to mobile computing that maybe they haven't gotten to yet because of the day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year challenges that they're up against?
I think what they really need to do, and this is something that we've been encouraging as well, is to get them to participate in other industry groups as a collective. And you'll get this from every software company, that if you have a customer and they show up and they only have 5 or 10,000 users, it's not as big a voice as someone with 100 or 200,000 users. And I think if all of these CIOs were to actually get together and say, this is what we need, we like the iPad or we like the Android, but we need more controls around it. We can't have it be a retail product to bring into our environment. I actually think industry would listen to it a lot more because right now you have individual agencies that are approaching vendors and other contractors saying, here's what we need, but the totals aren't there. The numbers aren't there. So I think the CIOs do need to start interacting more among themselves, joining groups. There are groups out there, for example, TSCP, which is Trans Global Secure Collaboration Program, where it is specifically made for getting a group of agencies together and start lobbying industry for, here are the changes we need in these products.
That's one of the things that that I think Karen Evans had in mind when she drove the FDCC, was not just the idea that the security element of it, that was certainly a big part of it, but I think it was also the idea that if the software companies and the hardware vendors knew exactly what was going to have to be on every machine, that they would kind of mold their products to fit the government rather than the government expecting to mold everything they got. Is that what it is? Yeah, and it's heading
in that way. But the other problem you have is the agencies are all moving at different speeds, right? You've got, for example, the State Department, which is well ahead. They've already moved into their first data center. They've got another one already being built. There are other agencies that are still trying to figure out where all of their centers are. So I think it's the fact that they're moving at these different speeds. They all have different concerns, and they all need to get to the same point, really.
Dmitry Kagansky is my guest. He's Chief Technical Officer for Federal for Quest Software on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Let's talk a little bit more about data center consolidation when we come back, because it is something the administration's talking about a lot. And as you mentioned, there's still a little bit of, not confusion exactly, but a lot of curiosity and questions about it. So we'll continue our conversation there when In Depth comes back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on March 1st. To RSVP, Visit spa.american.edu/key.
At Deloitte, we're helping government make a lasting impact in Americans' lives by addressing cybersecurity, financial reform, defense, energy, emerging markets, and healthcare. And we're hiring passionate professionals to help us get it done. You'll change lives and shape your future, helping government help America. See for yourself. Visit Deloitte.com/federalcareers. Equal opportunity employers.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
Understanding ADHD. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, makes it difficult to focus and control behaviors and impulses. It's the most common neurobehavioral disorder of childhood. Susanna Visser is an epidemiologist with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The diagnosis is more likely as children enter school age. It increases in middle school age and then decreases into adolescence.
There is no cure for the disorder, but there are medications and behavioral techniques that can relieve symptoms.
Family counseling and skill building for school that can improve the child's ability to relate to his or her family and friends.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. It's a list you don't want to be on, GAO's high-risk list. We'll flesh out the list with Comptroller General Gene Dodaro, find out what it tells us about government management. And it's telework week. Is telework working? What are the challenges? Insights from Ron Sanders, the former Chief Human Capital Officer for the intelligence community, this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dmitry Kagansky of Quest Software is my guest on the program today on Industry Chatter. We were talking about data center consolidation and some of the issues that agencies find themselves in when they're trying to do it. One of the things that vendors tell me on a regular basis is the agencies are starting to finally pull themselves away from the idea that every single IT project they do has to be unique and proprietary to that agency. How is that manifesting itself in data center consolidation? Are they more receptive to the idea that another agency has some success that they can stand on the shoulders of, so to speak?
Yeah, what they're doing is actually, to use that term, leveraging. Mm-hmm. They are going back and looking at what some of their counterparts are doing. There are still differences between the commercial side of things and the federal side. But they're definitely getting closer to using COTS and thinking more like a regular consumer of software. Mm-hmm. Regulations are really the only thing that are kind of pushing them in other directions, and even those are slowly getting adopted to where they meet up with where the commercial side fits what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what all that means really is that, yes, they are looking at consolidation, and they're looking at what components are doing. You take something like let's say the Treasury,
mm-hmm.
right? The Treasury actually has lots of components. The most notable one is the IRS.
Right.
So what you have are the different components getting wins and the other components in an agency looking at what have they done and trying to duplicate that. So mm-hmm. the agencies, across agencies, aren't doing as much collaboration yet, but it is getting there.
It seemed like for a long time agencies hesitated, even when somebody had a clear success story, to say, well, they did that. We have to do the same thing. Let's just do what they did. There has been some hesitancy to go that way.
There has been, but I think now with budgets being tightened, they don't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to start reusing what their peers are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go and reinvent the wheel every time. And it actually helps pretty much everyone. It helps us as a software vendor. It helps the contractors that are doing the work, because now you have a repeatable process,
mm-hmm.
much better management around it, much better chance of success.
Yeah, it strikes me that that's a wise approach, just because you can see where somebody else goofed up and not make the same mistakes or not make different mistakes, where you see where somebody either did it right or wrong.
Yeah, and we're seeing that especially in the consolidation side. We do quite a bit around modernization and around migrations, consolidating collapsing environments. And we have several initiatives in the DoD where the size and scale is much bigger than we've seen before. We're now looking at hundreds of thousands of users getting migrated versus before it was tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
So they are looking at the past successes and saying, what did we do right? Let's do it on a larger scale.
Yeah. Are those transitions scalable? I mean, if you figure out how to do it, say, at one component of your agency for 5,000 users, is it pretty easy to ramp that up and do 50,000 agency-wide, or are there challenges in some of these because of the scale?
The challenges aren't necessarily so much with the scale as it is with the systems that are already in place.
Mm-hmm.
The different components have different systems, so sometimes the migrations aren't all that easy to do from one component to another. But it is getting easier, and obviously as you build momentum, as systems are getting modernized themselves, it does become a lot easier.
All right. One element I think of making that transition easier, I imagine, is pushing stuff to the cloud. I've talked about cloud computing on any number of occasions on this program. The confusion around cloud now seems to be it seems like there's 50,000 flavors of it out there. It's like Baskin-Robbins, 33 different ways that you could potentially do it. Have the questions that agencies ask you about cloud changed over the last, say, 2 years or so?
We're getting more questions about cloud,
mm-hmm.
And the market's definitely become a lot more fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
Just as you were saying, you know, there's a lot of different flavors. What you're really seeing is there's three different levels. There's public cloud, and those are the things you see on the commercials. You see Microsoft out there saying, you know, people in an airport going to the cloud. And that's the public cloud, where it's shared and you have elastic resources. The other side of that is private cloud. And a lot of the confusion when we start talking about it is, well, isn't that really just time sharing?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we really just back to mainframes and I still have a fixed number of systems? The big difference is private clouds are elastic, that
mm-hmm.
they're built up, they're used for something, and then they're reclaimed back. So, yes, you buy a set number of machines, you have a certain amount of horsepower, but you do get a lot more reuse out of them instead of having them built up and then sitting idle for a new project only to get new hardware bought.
Mm-hmm.
So that's private clouds. And now you're starting to blend things. You're getting into hybrid clouds, which are public and private, where you say certain systems have to run private, but maybe certain things can be out in the public. A good example would be if the IRS were to take all of their forms, you know, nothing secretive, nothing private.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put all our forms out on a public forum. Let those servers handle it. We'll just pay someone to store them and serve them up.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to use IRS resources.
Mm-hmm. Mark Forman told me once that he thinks we'll get to a point where the cloud doesn't really need to be that secure, public clouds anyway, because the only stuff that'll be in them are things that we don't care if somebody breaks into and has access to, whether they break in the, whether they come in the front door with a key or whether they break in the window.
Yeah, and I think you're getting to that already now, right, where you've got Facebook and all this other social media where things just get published out, whether
mm-hmm.
you like it or not, and people are just going to be sensitive about what they put out there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Dmitry Kagansky is my guest. He's Chief Technical Officer for Federal for Quest Software. And let's talk more about the cloud, because there is still a lot of ambiguity about it out there, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 18 points. The Nasdaq higher by 7. Consumer prices rose in January, mainly because of higher grocery store and pump prices. Meantime, more Americans were standing on the nation's unemployment lines last week, filing first-time claims, 25,000 more. That was more than economists were forecasting. Strong earnings results from the likes of Duke Energy and gold mining giant Barrick's. Duke's net income grew 23% thanks to rising customer demand, and Barrick's quarterly profit jumped fourfold due to higher production and lower costs. Meantime, profit fell at J.M. Smucker, but the maker of Jif peanut butter and Folgers coffee still was able to beat analysts' expectations. The company also raising its full-year guidance. And a huge nationwide bust resulting in charges against 100 doctors, nurses, and physical therapists of Medicare fraud. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Ford Service presents Mike Rowe talking about getting things done.
On your car.
On your car.
Yeah, right. Look, you take it to the hardworking Ford-trained service professionals at your dealership.
Get the works. An oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection. Now just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate.
Done?
Not yet. Ford Service. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating dealership or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 3/31/11.
Done?
Done.
At Regions, we're building a better banking experience for each small business customer. That means giving you the basics, like checking and savings, as well as offering the right lending options. Because we understand how important capital, revenue, and cash flow are to your small business. So if you're ready for a bank that's as committed to growing your business as you are, switch to Regions. Visit Regions.com/yourbusiness today. Regions, it's time to expect more. Regions Bank, member FDIC. All loans subject to credit approvals.
But the FBI,
the case was revealed.
It's the Geico Gecko. And I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees, GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Here's Rear Admiral David Glenn, CIO of U.S. Cyber Command, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
I'm what I call hunting on our networks for adversaries. That moves the defense from a more static capability to a more dynamic one, in which we're actually looking for penetrations, getting inside that cyber chain of attack. For example, if you know you own a house and install an alarm system, that would be a static defense.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big enterprises and a lot of different things preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
President Obama has released his 2012 budget. How will agencies adapt to tighter budget controls while still delivering? How can they identify high-risk IT projects for budget savings? Join AFSEA Bethesda and a panel of CIOs, including Interior's new CIO, Bernard Mazur, for its federal budget preview at the Bethesda North Marriott on February 25th. Register today at www.afseabethesda.org/febbreakfast.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dmitry Kagansky is Chief Technical Officer of the Federal Sector at Quest Software and my guest for Industry Chatter today. And when it comes to the cloud, we have the Cloud First Initiative. We have agencies that are starting to move certain elements of their operations to the cloud and so on. Quest does a lot of work in the private sector, too. How does what the federal government's doing and where they are in understanding and utilizing the advantage of the cloud compare to what's going on in the private sector? Because I think we often assume, fairly or unfairly, federal government's so far behind the technology and da, da, da.
Yeah, so what's actually happening is the federal government is taking a different direction on the cloud. On the commercial side of things, the cloud is seen much more prevalent to have public or basically co-located with other entities.
Mm-hmm.
Federal government can't have that because of certain mandates. So what's happening is commercial is going down the email and collaborative services route, whereas the government's moving more towards private cloud. They're still going to put in that same sort of infrastructure, but the type of data that they're going to put out there and who can access it and how it's governed is going to be different. And that those are the tools that they're really looking for, and that's the big differentiation.
We were talking during the break about the concept of the private cloud and the, so far at least, stovepiping may be a harsh word, but that's kind of what it looks like, I imagine, where the agencies are not really cross-cutting to take advantage of my agency has a cloud set up. I could use some of your resources, but it's really still limited to components within one particular agency. Do you see much of a future for that kind of cross-cutting, or because of the nature, as you were talking about, the unique structure of agencies and the desire to keep information proprietary within agencies and not commingle stuff, do you think what we see now is kind of what we're going to see?
I think so. I think you'll see ultimately several large private clouds where like agencies can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
So the DOD will have their own. There'll probably be one on the research and development side where you'll have NASA, NIST, maybe some other technical agencies, finance and any sort of financial governance might mm-hmm. have one. So there'll be some commingling, but ultimately there will be some stovepiping and some silos.
Now, when we talk about commingling, I want to make sure that we're clear, because I've never heard anyone imply that my files are going to be mixed with your files. It's not that. It's just data that's stored in the same installation. It's not that the actual pieces of information are mixed together, right?
Exactly. Ultimately, you have a server sitting in a room somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and that whole server may be dedicated to you and your agency, but if you're going to commingle, you're going to have another server that might be part of my agency.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't serve the same mission, there's going to be an admin that's going to have access to both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the commingling that you really have, is ultimately that physical hardware does need to get partitioned out, and the people responsible for one agency's data only touch those servers.
So it's not even the issue of the hardware or the software. It's the issue of the person that's walking around there carrying a can of Red Bull and making sure that everything's turned on the right way and running the way it should. And that's what we're concerned about when it comes to the commingling of data, not the infrastructure. Am I right?
Exactly. It's separate rooms, separate access for different agencies and different levels of data. All of this has always been a people problem. It's mm-hmm. not a technology problem. If you want cloud Quest and a whole lot of other vendors can help provide that to you pretty quickly, mm-hmm. however you want to do it, private, public, hybrid. The problem is always how you govern it, how you monitor it, how you control it, mm-hmm. and it comes down to policy and procedure.
Does the policy and procedure potentially override the problems with the people, or because there's a human element involved and humans have a chance to do potentially very wacky things, do we have to have a continually evolving policy and procedures infrastructure?
We do. And honestly, you see it happening time and again. Every time there's a leak or a breach, and we talked about this a little bit over the break as well, the fact that things on the federal side are much more public.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are commercial organizations that have had leaks and intrusions. You just don't hear about them.
Right.
Whereas here you get hauled up on the Hill and you get to answers to a group of people as to what happened publicly.
Mm-hmm.
So the people are always going to change up what they're doing. You can't anticipate every possible behavior. So the policies are going to change as new situations happen. Like I said, WikiLeaks obviously happened. That was an access control problem where someone had too much access. So now policies are getting revised around it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that the government's criticized for from time to time is the pace at which some of those changes can happen. Compare, if you can, a little bit the difference to in speed in which private sector can change their policies and procedures compared to the government.
Well, there's not as much regulation on the commercial side. Effectively, you have SOX, you have HIPAA, and you have a few other things, and a lot of it is just self-governing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the federal side, there's a lot more mandates, a lot more lockdowns and controls around things. The other side of it is that the federal government, I think they have a lot more to protect. They mm-hmm. have a lot more data and a lot more types of data. If you're a bank, you have financial data. If you have a breach, it's one type of leak, whereas on the federal side, you can potentially have a disaster mm-hmm. if there's a lot of different data out there. Now, on the commercial side, I don't think they're nearly as quick as people seem compared to the federal government. There's certain things that happen on the federal side that I've been really, really surprised with,
mm-hmm.
Especially things like the cloud. I can tell you on the commercial side, private cloud, it's out there, but it's not as prominent. Whereas mm-hmm. there's a lot more discussion on the federal side about how do we get there? How do we do it? We need to start putting things in now. Mm-hmm. You have Vivek Kundra out there saying you've got to do cloud first in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Get three projects going.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have those kind of hasty mandates from the commercial side. They're a lot more cautious in certain things. They'll look at cost savings, but they'll probably mull things over a bit and see where things shake out. So I think there's policy driving quicker response here as well.
Is that good or bad or just different, do you think?
I think it's different. I think there's some of the things happening in the federal space that the commercial side can definitely learn from.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that there would be, if you probably went out and polled 1,000 people, just general citizens walking around, I doubt you would get a whole bunch of people that suspected that the federal government could teach the private sector some lessons in IT. I think that's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because if you think about the government, all the different things they do, and one of the customers I do quite a lot of work with is the IRS, you think about what they do. They have mm-hmm. a very seasonal business, right?
Mm-hmm.
They ramp up and scale down in just a few quarters. Right now, they've got a flurry of activity going
yeah.
on. And you think about all the things that are involved in doing that. They have over 100,000 people doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of organizations that are actually at that level with that number of employees having to coordinate activity over a 4 or 5 month span.
Mm-hmm. Dmitry Kagansky is my guest with Quest Software on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The nation has lots of cybersecurity strategies, maybe too many. Here's former Air Force Lieutenant General Harry Radege, now a member of the Commission on Cybersecurity for the 44th Presidency.
But we still, as a nation, lack the integrated national cybersecurity strategy. And that's where we think that tremendous effort is still needed.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on March 1st. To RSVP, visit spa.american.edu/key.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 1 to 3.
Deloitte's Bill Eggers on reorganizing government agencies.
We have a once-in-a-generation chance to do this differently, to take advantage of all the new technologies, the new business models, the more horizontal structures, to create a different shape of what these agencies are going to look like. Flatter organizational structures, more horizontal.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Dmitry Kagansky with Quest Software. And we talked about the cloud for a period of time. The first question that people used to talk about when it came to the cloud was security, is how do I know when my stuff is not in the server that I can go put my arms around anymore, that it's secure? Have we made a lot of progress when it comes to not just the security, but also to being able to give comfort to the folks whose data is no longer right where they can touch it?
Well, right now at this very moment, no. That hasn't changed all that much, mm-hmm. but it is actually making a lot more progress in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is something that's been thrown about quite a while now with HSPD-12, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the whole two-factor authentication, stronger authentication, things being locked down. But what's changed in the last year, year and a half or so, is that the CIO Council has put out a directive called the FICAM Roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's the Identity Credentialing Access Management Roadmap. And they've told every agency, you've got to get on this roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to use those smart cards, those little plastic ID cards, just as gates and badges and physical security. You've got to start tying logical access to them.
Mm-hmm.
By them putting that roadmap out there and getting the agencies going in that direction, there's definitely been more activity into how do we start using those cards for actual system access.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we're going to get much better lockdown, much better security, much better feeling around things being locked down, because mm-hmm. they're going to have this heightened authentication, heightened access control that people have generally ignored up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some motivators behind it, where they're saying budgets are going to get cut if you don't follow this roadmap.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you say that has not, a lot of attention hasn't been paid to that, because it has seemed to me that there have been two tracks. Identity management is over here on this track, and over here you have security on this track, and they haven't really come together. And to hear you talk about it, it seems like there's a logical connection there that can provide a tremendously extra thick layer of security when you know that the people who are supposed to be in a particular place on a network are really the people that they say they are when they log in.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because just in the last year, you've always had some sort of chief information security officer or someone with that type of role,
mm-hmm.
but now every agency is starting to have a separate ICAM lead, and now that person oftentimes winds up under the CISO.
Mm-hmm.
So there is meat behind this. There is a movement to start looking at identity management as a cybersecurity initiative,
mm-hmm.
to consolidate all of that and start tracking what people are doing and how access is controlled.
That probably makes the CIO happy too, because cybersecurity for a long time was really difficult for a CIO to demonstrate return on investment. You could spend all this money and not necessarily be able to, you might know because you're the IT expert, but it might be hard to go into the secretary and justify why you want to ask for all this money when the secretary could say, well, I know security is important, but we haven't been breached too terribly badly, so why do we want to do all this stuff?
Yeah, and there's definitely been a shift there. If you look at the budget that was just released, mm-hmm. there is a huge rise in cybersecurity being funded. I believe NIST is getting something like a 50 or 60% increase mm-hmm. strictly for cybersecurity R&D. So as you have more leaks and more unfortunate scenarios that happen, it does gain awareness. The other side of it is that people are looking to have faster projects, faster ROI, faster turnaround times. Mm-hmm. So they're doing things in more bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
They're not doing an identity and access management project anymore where it's soup to nuts. They're trying to get into just password management, mm-hmm. just privileged account management, just different areas of it, logging and auditing, those sorts of things that get you quicker wins, that you could show results and keep a project funded.
Mm-hmm. And that's, it's not just the funding elements of it either. It's the project management aspect of it as well, where you're trying to keep a better grip on how your project is doing, whether it's successful or if it's not successful, how to get it back on track faster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the biggest takeaway that you had when you read through the budget and looked at where the priorities were and what was being shifted where?
I think it's interesting that there is a big push towards using more commercial off-the-shelf software, using more industry standard type things, that there's newer technologies. The one thing that does concern me is the whole modernization effort. The, mm-hmm. There needs to be an acknowledgement that there are still older systems that need to get brought in line. Mm-hmm. They can't all be put into the cloud. They can't all be consolidated down or migrated. So that was the biggest concern for me on that side, is that is there enough attention being paid to just the operation and maintenance of systems that cannot be changed?
Mm-hmm. I guess kind of the converse of that is there may still be some legacy systems that are clunky and maybe not perfect, but they're still working okay and still have a reasonable life left that maybe could be left alone for a little while and don't really need to be modernized just for the sake of modernization.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, I would hope that everyone does a good evaluation of what it is they actually need to migrate, that they don't jump in and start pushing everything mm-hmm. in one direction or another.
Yeah. What's the decision-making process there? Is it really just a matter of, I'm going to go and look at this system. It looks like it's working fine. It's still constructed in a way that we can perform maintenance on it when it needs to be. So we'll leave this one alone and move on to the next thing. Is it that simple?
Some of it is. And then also just what's the lifespan of the system? Mm-hmm. You know, is it for a particular mission or project, or is it something that is ongoing? Mm-hmm. I think the ongoing systems are the ones that need to get reviewed and need to get modernized. The ones that are short-term based, and short-term maybe 5 or 10 years, mm-hmm. are probably the ones that can remain and continue to run as long as you know that there's not high overhead on it.
Because that's another complaint that Congress has had. Both people on both sides of the aisle have said sometimes it looks like you just want to switch systems out because you want something newer. And we're obviously not in a place financially anymore where I think a whole lot of that will be going on.
Well, you do have to be careful, because what you're going to run into is if you don't switch out systems in some sort of timely manner, you're not going to have the resources to manage them. If you think about just the Y2K problem, mm-hmm. right? We're now 10, 11 years past it. At the time, it was a big mainframe problem. There's fewer and fewer mainframe admins, developers, administrators in general to do that sort of work. So mm-hmm. it winds up costing you more, even if you have fewer bodies maintaining it. Yeah. So you do have to be judicious. There has to be a cutoff to say if this system's more than X number of years old, or going to live for X number of years, we need to make sure that it's kept current so that costs stay in line.
Mm-hmm. You just put that stuff on a matrix and try to figure out where the individual systems plot on this matrix, or, I mean, how do you noodle through some of that?
Yeah, a lot of it is just looking at the platforms and the technology. One of the big things that have happened recently, though, is the whole advent of virtualization. Mm-hmm. Right? It's been around for tens of years now. I mean, we're going back to the 60s and 70s, but it's taken on a new life where you can keep old systems essentially on life support mm-hmm. and put them on modern servers through virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way that you can reduce costs down. You don't have to keep a big clunky box laying around anymore. You can virtualize it, put it onto a larger, beefier box that physically might be smaller and take less power.
Let's talk a little bit more about virtualization to wrap up when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Dmitry Kagansky. He's Chief Technical Officer for Federal at Quest Software, and we'll wrap up in just a few moments.
Anup Ghosh from Avincia Alliance commented during the panel discussion, Advanced Persistent Threat, Industrial Strength Hacking, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
From a technology point of view, we know we're not going to fix the user, and we're not going to create perfect software. So what can we do? Well, we can design resilient architectures, said in a different way, which is separate the untrusted code and separate user actions from the security of that system.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen. Whether it's the theft of intellectual property, state secrets, or the disruption of critical systems that power our economy and ensure our national security, Booz Allen Hamilton's strategy and technology consultants provide an integrated cybersecurity approach across the full spectrum of people, process, and technology to leverage and provide a way of thinking and action to address advanced persistent threats across government and industry. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by ARINC.
CIA Director Leon Panetta told senators yesterday, if the U.S. captures top al-Qaeda leaders, Osama bin Laden or Ayman al-Zawahiri, they would likely be sent to the Guantanamo Bay military prison. What does that say about President Obama's plan to close Gitmo? White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said the president remains committed to closing it, but he would not speculate on what would happen in the unlikely event Osama bin Laden were captured alive. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally. ARINC has. ARINC and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, February 20th. The Wilder Brothers are going to be in studio.
Wilder Brothers.
They're shaking up cocktails at Zola and Zola Wine and Kitchen, and they'll be shaking it up here. And Kashan 555 is coming back to D.C., and they're coming in studio here first.
Yeah, it's all about pork. I love it. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live right here at 1500 and 820 a.m.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual COSI Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractor, working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefit issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dmitry Kagansky, the Chief Technical Officer for Federal at Quest Software, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about virtualization and the potential power that's there with some agencies that are dealing with some legacy systems. Some of these systems work fine. But they maybe could move faster, or they could, what are some of the other advantages for an agency to think rather than building something from scratch or even taking something off the shelf? Let me keep using what I'm doing and just kind of update the physical infrastructure around it.
Yep. And, what we're seeing is Right now, only about 16-17% of systems out there are virtualized.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting to see a lot more of that. I think Gartner and some of the other analysts put it at 50% within the next few years. And the federal space is going to be much the same. There's going to be systems that are going to benefit greatly from virtualization. You can get rid of the older hardware, put them on modern servers, but continue to run those older environments. The other side of virtualization is desktop virtualization, which then plays back into security and user access and control.
Mm-hmm.
If you can actually get back to giving everyone a terminal, but their desktop sits back at the data center,
mm-hmm.
you can now virtualize their desktop. And if something happens, they get a virus, they get some sort of malware, you can just delete the whole desktop, start from scratch. So lots of benefits around virtualization, and we expect to see a lot more activity around it in the federal space.
We're almost out of time, and it's been great to have you here today. I appreciate you coming in. If you and I sit down a year, 2 years from now, what do you think will be dramatically different about the federal IT landscape from what we see today?
I think the big thing is going to be identity and access management,
mm-hmm.
where there's definitely going to be a bigger push for having things organized and controlled. And I think there is going to be a lot more virtualization. We're definitely going to see huge growth in that area over the next year or two, mm-hmm. just because of budgets and directives and mandates.
Thank you very much for being here today. It's been great to talk to you. Dmitry Kagansky has been my guest. He's the Chief Technical Officer for Federal at Quest Software.